Whether you're gifting, decorating, or treating yourself, Lowe's December Deal Drops are here to help you save more all month long. Get up to 50% off select holiday decor. Plus, get up to 45% off select tools and accessories. Shop new December Deal Drops every week this month and get so much more out of your holidays. Lowe's, we help you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
Well, another election cycle is behind us. And, you know, you guys have been busy sending us articles and stuff from Electoral Vote about what a second Trump term might look like.
It's definitely got folks talking.
Yeah.
There's a lot of curiosity.
Yeah, about how things might be different this time around.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, given how the first term went.
Exactly.
And we've got articles on everything.
Mm.
Potential policy changes, legal battles, even how some blue states are already thinking about how they might push back against some of Trump's more, let's just say, ambitious ideas.
Ambitious.
Yeah.
Big ideas.
Huge ideas.
Huge ideas. Exactly. And, of course, we can't forget about the international implications.
Oh, of course not.
What a second Trump term might mean for, you know, global relations and the balance of power and all that.
Yeah. There are a lot of eyes on the U.S. right now.
For sure. So let's just jump right in.
Okay.
This first article here, Trump 2.0, really caught my eye.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of paints a picture of a potentially more emboldened, maybe even vengeful Trump coming out of this victory.
It's interesting because it's not 2016 anymore, right?
Right.
This isn't the same Trump.
Right.
He's been through 88 indictments, assassination attempts.
Right.
The Politico analysis actually suggests that those experiences have probably changed him quite a bit.
You think so?
I mean, how could they not?
Yeah.
You know, it makes you wonder how he even processes all that.
It's like he's playing by a whole different set of rules.
Right. And this time he's got a cabinet full of folks who are there for loyalty, not expertise, according to this article.
Right. And the RNC, you know, they're fully in his corner now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, remember back in the first term, they were at least trying to steer him a little bit, present a more traditional conservative image. But now it seems like they're just an extension of his political operation.
It's his party now.
Yeah. Do you think that that lack of dissent within the party will make him even more, you know, bolder in his policy decisions?
I think it's certainly possible, but you also have to factor in people like Elon Musk. You know, they seem to get along, but will that actually translate into policy influence?
Yeah, especially on economic issues.
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, it's like a political reality show unfolding.
It really is.
But we also can't forget that Trump is not getting any younger.
That's true.
He will be 82 by the end of this term.
Yeah.
So do you think that, combined with all the potential legal battles he could be facing,
mm-hmm.
is that going to, you know, affect his decision-making in any way?
It's hard to say.
Make him more cautious or maybe even more determined to cement his legacy?
I mean, this is Trump we're talking about. He doesn't always make the most predictable decisions.
That's true.
It's anyone's guess how those factors will play out.
Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit. This next article titled Deportation Nation paints a pretty intense picture of what's going on in some blue states.
Okay.
It seems like they're really gearing up for a fight against Trump's proposed deportation efforts.
Yeah, this is a big one with a lot at stake for everybody. Blue states are looking at a lot of different options, according to this article.
Mm-hmm.
Legal challenges, public awareness campaigns to highlight how mass deportations would hurt the economy, and then some even more extreme measures.
Really? Like what?
Like maybe even using their National Guard to directly resist.
Wow.
It could get messy.
The article actually uses the phrase, papers, please.
Yeah.
You know, evoking some pretty dark historical comparisons.
It does make you think about what could happen.
Yeah, it really underscores the potential for serious tension and even conflict if things escalate.
And the article makes another really important point.
Yeah.
Trump could retaliate against states that don't cooperate.
Right.
By cutting federal funding.
Well, wow.
You know, forcing them to choose between compliance and basically crippling budget cuts.
That's a tough choice.
It's a war of attrition.
Yeah, and the article brings up another interesting point. Even if blue states successfully push back against deportations, there's still a chance of political blowback.
Right.
Trump could easily turn this into a wedge issue to energize his base for future elections.
Absolutely. It's a complex issue with no easy solutions.
No easy answers.
Yeah.
Okay, so this next article is a little unsettling.
Oh.
It compares Trump to Viktor Orban,
okay,
the Prime Minister of Hungary, who has basically dismantled democratic norms and institutions.
Yeah, that's a chilling comparison.
It is, but it's worth taking a look at.
Yeah.
So the article describes Orbán's approach as a two-phase process.
Okay.
The first phase is what they call the software phase.
Okay.
Where you basically cultivate a certain mindset among the population, appealing to anti-elite sentiment, stoking fears about immigration, promoting a strong sense of nationalism.
It's the classic populist playbook.
Yeah, creating that us versus them mentality.
Right.
The elites are out of touch, the other is a threat.
Exactly. And once that foundation is laid, you move on to what they call the hardware phase.
Why?
This is where you see concrete actions aimed at consolidating power, undermining institutions, controlling the flow of information.
So things like stacking the courts with loyalists, limiting press freedom, maybe even changing election laws.
Exactly. The article goes into a lot of detail about how Orbán implemented these tactics in Hungary.
Right.
It's definitely a cautionary tale.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, you know, if the software of authoritarianism is already being installed.
Right.
How do we rewrite the code?
That's the big question. But the article does offer a glimmer of hope.
Okay.
It talks about empowering local organizations, shifting campaign financing away from those big donors, and reclaiming that populist messaging, but for progressive causes.
Okay.
And a really important point it makes is about showing respect for the working class, understanding where they're coming from.
It's about building trust and a sense of shared purpose.
Absolutely. It's a big challenge, but a necessary one if we want to protect our democratic values.
Okay, well, that was pretty intense.
It was.
Maybe we need to lighten things up a little bit.
Okay.
At least we can all breathe a sigh of relief that Matt Gaetz isn't going to be heading up the Department of Justice, right?
Well, career lawyers might not want to celebrate just yet.
Oh, why is that?
Trump's pick for Attorney General Pam Bondi. She raises some questions.
Like what?
Well, on paper, she looks good.
Okay.
Strong legal background experience as Florida's AG. But there are some red flags.
Really? Like what?
The article brings up that incident with Trump University.
Okay, yeah.
She allegedly dropped a fraud investigation into the university after getting a big donation from Trump.
Oh, wow.
So it makes you wonder if she can be impartial.
Right. Can she really act in the best interest of the law?
Exactly. Or is she just another one of Trump's loyal supporters?
Is she going to put her thumb on the scales of justice?
That's what a lot of legal experts and ethics watchdogs are worried about.
Okay, so this is definitely a developing story.
Oh, yeah. One to keep an eye on for sure.
Okay, so speaking of potential political battles, this next article gets into what we can expect from the upcoming lame duck session of Congress.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the fight over judicial appointments.
It's going to be a showdown.
It sounds like it.
This article suggests Republicans are ready to pull out all the stops to get their nominees confirmed before the Democrats potentially take control of the Senate.
So it's political hardball.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The article even mentions some pretty crazy tactics Republicans might use.
Like what?
Like demanding roll call votes every 15 minutes.
Really?
Just to slow things down and wear down the opposition.
Wow, talk about political gamesmanship.
It sounds exhausting, not to mention a huge waste of time and taxpayer money.
It's a classic obstructionist strategy, but it can be effective and it could have long-term consequences.
How so?
Well, if the Republicans change the Senate rules now to push through their nominees, it sets a precedent.
Yeah.
The Democrats might feel like they have to do the same thing if they gain control.
Right.
So you end up with this tit-for-tat escalation that just further erodes the norms and traditions of the Senate.
It's what goes around comes around.
Exactly. It shows you what happens when short-term political gains are put ahead of the long-term health of our institutions.
Okay, so we've talked about potential battles at the national level, but what about the impact on individual politicians? This next article focuses on Senator Tom Tillis.
Okay.
He's facing a tough re-election bid in 2026.
Yeah.
In a state that's becoming more and more purple.
Right, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Not an easy place to be a Republican these days.
It seems like he's walking a political tightrope.
He needs to appeal to a wider range of voters, including moderates who maybe aren't so enthusiastic about Trump. But if he moves too far away from the party line, he risks alienating his base and facing a primary challenge.
The article mentioned Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson as a potential challenger.
Yeah, Robinson just lost the governor's race, but he's a Trump loyalist through and through.
So Tillis really can't afford to slip up.
Not if he wants to keep his seat. It's a good example of the influence Trump still has over the party.
It makes you wonder how many other Republican lawmakers are in similar situations.
A lot, I'd imagine.
Forced to choose between appealing to their base and trying to win over more moderate voters in these increasingly competitive districts.
It's a trend we're going to see more and more of, I think.
Okay, from political tightropes to potential clashes of the titans.
Oh.
This next article has me intrigued.
What is it?
It focuses on Trump's possible plans to end the federal tax credit for electric vehicles.
Interesting.
Yeah, I have a feeling this could lead to some fireworks between him and Elon Musk.
That would be something to see.
The New York Times article says this could be a major blow to electric vehicle sales.
It probably would. The industry has relied heavily on those tax credits.
Yeah, and considering how much Musk has championed electric vehicles,
right,
it's hard to imagine him staying quiet if Trump actually goes through with this.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, you've got Trump, who seems to love confrontation, often makes decisions based on gut feeling more than careful policy analysis.
Yeah.
And then you've got Musk, a visionary entrepreneur with a massive platform.
He could definitely sway public opinion.
It's a clash of personalities and ideologies.
For sure. And it could have a real impact on the future of the electric vehicle market.
Yeah.
And the whole debate about climate change and transitioning to cleaner energy.
This is definitely one to watch.
I'll be following it closely.
Me too.
Okay.
Okay, speaking of global trends.
Okay.
This last article for today really caught my eye because it's about that surprise victory of a far-right candidate in Romania's presidential election.
Yeah, that was unexpected.
It was. So the Romanian presidency is mostly ceremonial.
Largely, yeah.
But this result is still significant, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
It's part of a larger trend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing dissatisfaction with the status quo, increasing appeal of these populist nationalist movements.
It's happening all over the world.
It seems like the same forces that helped Trump win in 2016 are gaining traction globally.
It's a trend that has a lot of people worried.
I can see why it raises some big questions about the future of global stability and whether we're seeing a decline in democracy around the world.
It's a lot to think about.
It is. And it feels like we've only just scratched the surface here.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this first part of our deep dive.
Yeah.
But there's still so much more to explore. When we come back, we'll delve deeper into the potential global implications of a second Trump term and what it all means for the future of democracy.
I'm ready for part two.
Let's do it. Welcome back. So we've spent some time thinking about what another 4 years of Trump might mean for the U.S.
Yeah, lots to unpack there.
Definitely. But let's widen the lens a bit and consider the global picture.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what happens in America doesn't stay in America.
It's like that butterfly effect, right?
Exactly. When seemingly small event can set off a chain reaction across the world.
Right. And with everything so interconnected these days.
Oh, yeah.
It's more important than ever to think about how a second Trump term could impact, you know, international relations, global trends, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And that article we talked about earlier about the far right candidate winning in Romania really highlights the global appeal of populism.
It's a wake up call for sure that what's happening here isn't unique.
Not at all. There's a real sense of disillusionment with traditional politics in a lot of places.
People are looking for radical change.
Yeah, even if it comes at the expense of democratic norms.
So it's not just a right wing thing then?
Nope. We're seeing left wing populist movements gaining ground too.
It's almost like a global trend.
It is. And the common thread is a deep sense of disenfranchisement.
People feel like the system is rigged.
Right. They feel like their voices aren't being heard. Their concerns are being ignored.
And that's when they become more susceptible to extreme ideologies.
Right. It doesn't matter if it's coming from the left or the right. They're just looking for someone who seems to understand their anger and frustration.
And promises to shake things up.
Exactly. And remember, back in 2016, Trump, with all that drain the swamp rhetoric, he tapped into that perfectly.
He was the ultimate outsider.
Yeah, right. And in a lot of ways, his victory mirrored what we've seen with other populist leaders around the world.
They exploit those feelings of disillusionment and anger for their own political gain.
Exactly.
But if Romania's presidency is mostly ceremonial, like the article said, why should we be so concerned about this shift?
It's symbolic, you know?
Okay.
It shows that these ideas are gaining traction, resonating with voters, even in places where we might not expect it.
So it's a sign of things to come, maybe.
It could be.
Okay, so what can we do to combat this erosion of democratic values?
Right.
Not just in the U.S., but globally. Is it even possible to turn the tide?
It's the question everyone's asking, and there are no easy answers. But one thing the article suggested was focusing on local organizations, grassroots movements that are working to strengthen democratic institutions and promote civic engagement.
So empowering people to make a difference in their own communities.
Right, rather than waiting for change to come from the top down.
Makes sense. What about campaign finance reform?
Yeah, the article talked about that too. Reducing the influence of big donors could help level the playing field.
Right, because when elections are basically bought and paid for,
exactly,
politicians end up being more accountable to their donors than to the people they're supposed to represent.
And that leads to policies that benefit special interests, not the common good.
So campaign finance reform could help ensure that elected officials are actually listening to the needs of ordinary citizens.
That's the goal. It's about shifting the balance of power back to the people.
Sounds good. But how do you actually make that happen?
It's not easy.
I imagine not.
It takes a sustained effort from citizens' advocacy groups, even some politicians who are willing to challenge the status quo.
Right.
It's a long game.
Yeah, but it's worth playing if we want to create a more equitable and democratic society.
Absolutely. And the article also made another interesting point about reclaiming populist messaging.
Really? Isn't that a bit risky?
Well, it can be.
I mean, isn't that how populist leaders like Trump gain power in the first place?
Yeah, by tapping into people's emotions and fears.
Right.
But it can also be a powerful tool for positive change.
How so?
When it's used to connect with people, authentically articulate a vision for a more just and equitable society.
So not abandoning it altogether.
Right.
But using it more responsibly.
Exactly. To promote progressive values and policies.
So it's about offering real solutions.
Yeah.
Not just empty promises or scapegoats.
Right. And it's about recognizing that the problems we're facing,
mm-hmm.
things like economic inequality, climate change, political corruption.
Yeah.
They're complex. They require nuanced solutions.
No easy fixes.
Nope.
Okay, so let's bring it back to the U.S. for a moment.
Okay.
We were talking earlier about Senator Tillis and his reelection bid.
Right, walking that tightrope.
Exactly. Mm. Do you think he can actually pull it off, appealing to both his base and those moderate voters?
It's a tough one. He can't afford to alienate either group.
And the article mentioned Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson as a potential primary challenger.
Yeah, Robinson, he's a real wild card.
What's his background?
Well, he's a staunch conservative. He came to prominence after a video of him speaking at a gun rights rally went viral.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's very much aligned with Trump's style of politics.
So he could be a real threat to Tillis.
Definitely, especially if Tillis is seen as straying too far from the party line.
It seems like the Republican Party is facing some real internal divisions.
They are. They're at a crossroads right now trying to figure out what they stand for in a post-Trump world.
It's like they're trying to reconcile these two different visions for the party.
Exactly. And it's not just playing out at the national level.
Right.
You see it in state and local races, too.
It's playing out everywhere.
It is. And it's going to be fascinating to see how it all shakes out.
Absolutely. And, you know, this whole thing about the Republican Party trying to figure out its identity.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that article we read about young people getting their news from right-wing influencers on social media.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that's playing a role in this shift we're seeing?
It's definitely a factor.
These influencers, they present a very different view of the world.
They do, often one that's not based in reality.
Right.
They appeal to people's emotions and biases.
And they're really good at spreading misinformation and conspiracy theories.
Unfortunately.
But the article also said that young people are actively seeking out information.
They are.
Trying to make sense of what's going on.
Right.
So there's a thirst for knowledge there.
There is, which is encouraging.
But how do we make sure they're getting accurate and reliable information?
That's the challenge we need to invest in media literacy education.
Okay.
Teach young people how to critically evaluate sources, identify bias, separate fact from fiction.
Give them the tools to be savvy consumers of information.
Exactly. We need a generation that's equipped to think critically and make informed decisions.
Not just passively absorbing whatever they see online.
Right.
Well said. Okay, before we move on to our final segment.
Okay.
I wanted to touch on something we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Trump's potential cabinet picks.
Oh, right.
The article suggested that he might be leaning towards appointing a lot of loyalists and media personalities.
Yeah, not so much emphasis on experience or expertise.
Right. And the article also said that he might be looking to settle scores.
Oh, yeah.
Punish his perceived enemies.
You know, Trump, he loves a good grudge.
Do you think that'll be a major focus of his second term?
It's definitely possible he's shown that he's not afraid to use the power of the presidency for personal gain.
Right, and to target people he sees as disloyal.
Exactly.
Sounds like it could be a pretty chaotic 4 years.
It's hard to say for sure, but I wouldn't expect a quiet and uneventful presidency.
Probably not. Okay, so let's talk about the economy.
Okay.
What are the experts saying about the potential impact of Trump's economic policies, especially his stance on trade?
Well, from what I've read, he's likely to double down on that America First agenda.
Right.
More tariffs on goods from China and other countries.
Even though a lot of economists say that those tariffs will hurt American consumers?
Yeah, they say they'll lead to higher prices and could trigger retaliatory tariffs from other countries.
Leading to trade wars.
Exactly, which ultimately hurt everyone involved.
Right.
It's a risky strategy.
It is, and we've already talked about the rise of populism and nationalism globally.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other trends we should be paying attention to?
Well, one concern is the possibility of a global recession.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There are signs that the world economy is slowing down, and some experts think a recession is inevitable in the next few years.
And how might that impact everything else we've been talking about?
Well, recessions tend to make things worse.
Right.
More unemployment, poverty, inequality.
Right.
And that can fuel resentment and create opportunities for populist leaders who offer simple solutions to complex problems.
Vicious cycle.
It can be.
So we're facing a lot of challenges.
We are both domestically and internationally.
But you said there are also opportunities for positive change.
There are, I promise.
Okay, I'm ready for some optimism now.
I hear you.
How can we navigate this uncertain future and work towards a better outcome?
That's what we'll explore in our final segment. We'll talk about some potential solutions and what we can do as individuals to make a difference.
Well, after all that, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little overwhelmed.
It's a lot to process.
It is, all those potential challenges. And, you know, what a second Trump term might look like, both here in the U.S. and globally, it's heavy stuff. But you said there were some reasons to be hopeful, too, right?
There are definitely some bright spots amidst all the uncertainty.
Okay, good. Because I need a dose of optimism right now.
I hear you. It's easy to feel like we're just tiny little cogs in a giant machine, right?
Right. Like our actions don't really matter.
But that's just not true. Every single thing we do, no matter how small, can have a ripple effect.
Okay, so where do we even begin?
Well, remember that article we talked about that compared Trump to Viktor Orban?
The authoritarian playbook?
Yeah, it didn't just outline the problem. It actually offered some solutions, ways to strengthen democratic institutions.
Right, like empowering local organizations, getting big money out of politics, reclaiming that populist messaging.
Exactly. And one really important point they made was about showing respect and understanding for the working class.
A group that's often overlooked or even demonized by the elites.
It's about bridging that divide, finding common ground, you know, recognizing that we're all in this together.
We can't afford to be divided, especially when there are people out there who benefit from that division.
Exactly. They exploit our differences for their own gain.
So it sounds like a lot of this comes down to changing our mindset.
It does. It's about embracing a more collaborative and inclusive approach to problem solving.
Working together even when we don't agree on everything.
Exactly. It's about breaking free from that us versus them mentality.
Okay, so that's the big picture.
Yeah.
But what about on a more individual level? What can ordinary people like me and you actually do to make a difference?
Well, one of the most powerful tools we have is our voice.
Speaking out about the issues we care about.
Right. Getting involved in our communities. And in today's world, we have so many ways to amplify our voices.
Social media, online platforms, all
that's
that.
That's incredible, really.
So you're saying that even small actions, like, you know, fact-checking a misleading post on Facebook or having a respectful conversation with someone who sees things differently.
It all matters. It really does.
It can actually make a difference.
Absolutely. It's about creating a critical mass of informed and engaged citizens.
People who are willing to challenge misinformation, promote accurate information, stand up for what they believe in.
It's about being part of the solution, not just sitting on the sidelines complaining.
Right. And it's not just about fighting negativity either.
No, it's also about sharing positive stories.
Okay.
Highlighting the work of people and organizations who are making a difference, inspiring others to get involved.
So shifting the narrative.
Exactly. Countering all the doom and gloom with messages of hope and possibility, reminding ourselves that change is possible.
That we have the power to shape our own future.
I love that.
Okay. So speaking of shaping the future, we can't ignore the big elephant in the room, climate change.
We can't. It's an existential threat.
And it feels like it's been completely sidelined by the current administration.
It has, but there's actually a lot happening at the local and state levels, as well as in the private sector.
It's like that grassroots movement we were talking about.
It is. People are taking matters into their own hands.
Cities are implementing their own climate action plans. Businesses are investing in renewable energy.
Individuals are making changes in their own lives.
It's a reminder that we don't have to wait for the federal government to act.
We can create change from the bottom up.
And that's where the real hope lies, right?
It is. It's about the collective power of individuals demanding a better future.
Recognizing that our actions, no matter how small, can contribute to a larger movement.
It's about believing that change is possible.
You know, that reminds me of that Margaret Mead quote.
Which one?
Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has.
I love that quote. It's so true.
It is. Oh, this has been a fascinating conversation.
It has.
Thank you for walking us through all this. It's definitely given me a lot to think about.
My pleasure. You know, knowledge is power.
That's what this deep dive is all about.
The more informed we are, the better equipped we'll be to face whatever challenges come our way.
To create the future we want to see.
Exactly.
So to everyone listening out there, stay curious, stay engaged, and keep asking questions.
Don't be afraid to challenge the status quo.
And until next time, stay informed, stay hopeful, and most importantly, take care of yourselves and each other.